It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer, Kent. The Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey, it provides scientific information about the geology, mineral deposits, and the water resources of our state as part of UW-Madison Division of Extension. We meet its new director, Sue Swanson, who also serves as state geologist. Call in with a question. You can share your comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sue, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, give us some introduction. What is the purpose of the State Geological Survey?
Right. So the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey was created by the Wisconsin legislature way back in 1897. And it's actually a descendant of earlier state surveys in Wisconsin, which go back to 1854. These were originally actual surveys, multi-year efforts commissioned by the state legislature, and they were designed to describe and evaluate the state's geological and mineral resources. But they also did things like assign names to rock formations, and many of these names are still in use today. So like I said, we were formally established in 1897, and today we are part of the Division of Extension at UW-Madison. We're housed within the Natural Resources Institute, and we conduct natural resources inventories and applied research to produce information for decision-making, problem-solving, planning, management, development, and education. So, and we work with a variety of partners.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Like, what partners, what state agencies or departments use your analyses, and then for what purposes?
Right. Yeah. So we work with county and local governments, regional planning commissions, state agencies like the Department of Natural Resources or the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And we also work with federal agencies like the U.S. Forest Service. And I think it's really important to understand from the beginning that the State Geological Survey doesn't have any specific regulatory or enforcement responsibilities. So we really do aim to provide objective scientific information.
So that really gives you quite a bit of independence, and yet you're taking on projects that, these other state agencies or departments are asking you to take on. I mean, how does that type of relationship work, you know, in terms of what you prioritize?
That's right. So we work closely with state agencies in particular to develop priorities. And this might be around new legislation or rules that agencies like the Department of Natural Resources or DATCAP enact. So maintaining those partnerships is really important, making sure that there are good lines of communication.
How long might a project last?
Yeah, typical projects are at least 1 year in length, and oftentimes are multi-year. So one thing about geological information is that it takes some effort to go out and collect, right? Whether we are literally on foot looking at rock outcrops in the state, whether we are hiring drillers to help collect samples in the subsurface, or whether we're collecting groundwater samples, it can take some effort to actually plan the data collection phase of a project. And then additionally, especially for water resources questions, a single sample tends not to be as helpful as information that's collected over time. Mm-hmm. So we might go out to a particular site on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, on an annual basis to better understand how the system changes seasonally or annually.
Sue Swanson with us, Wisconsin's new state geologist, director of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way. The number is 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sue, you have spent decades in the field. Why did you decide to move from research in hydrogeology and more teaching-based roles to managing a statewide organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've always been interested in serving society. And so early in my career, I was a Peace Corps volunteer and gained valuable experience teaching math and science at a secondary school. I really enjoyed learning about cultures that differed from my own. That's one of the reasons I went into education as a whole in the first place. But after serving as a professor for over 20 years, I decided I was really interested in maybe having an impact on a statewide basis, really serving all the residents of Wisconsin. So that prompted a change in my career.
We're going to go way back to the Ice Age, land carved out by glaciers. How much of the research about our state's glacial geology comes from the survey, comes from the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey?
Right. Well, a lot of it does. So, and I think a good thing to note is that the mapping that the State Geological Survey does really underpins all of our work at the State Geological Survey. So whether we're talking about mapping of rocks, bedrock, or whether we're talking about mapping glacial deposits, it really impacts everything that we do. As listeners may know, Wisconsin was covered by glaciers repeatedly. And the most recent glacial period is actually named after the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin glaciation, because we have really clear features of that event in the state. And, that began about 32,000 years ago, and ended up covering most of Wisconsin, not all of Wisconsin. But the ice finally retreated about 7,000 years ago. So it's a big part of what shapes the landscape of Wisconsin today, and also is a really big part of why we have such abundant water resources in the state.
It truly makes us special in so many ways, especially in those natural resources. Sue Swanson is Wisconsin's new state geologist, director also of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. As we discuss the geological features of our state, call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey has been a state institution for 170 years. We learn about projects the survey takes on with its new director, Sue Swanson, who also serves as state geologist. And you can join the conversation at any point. Call in with a question. Share your perspectives, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sue, earlier this year, parts of Wisconsin experienced an exceptional drought. That's how it was characterized by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. How has the recent drought affected the research of the survey?
That's a great question. So thinking about our water resources in Wisconsin, I think Something that it might be helpful for listeners to understand is that primarily at the State Geological Survey, we study groundwater resources, sort of much more than surface water resources. The two interact, really. Really, the two are the same, but we tend to focus more on groundwater. And groundwater responds very slowly to changes in the water cycle. So the drought over this last summer would have a greater effect on our groundwater resources, that is, maybe a decline in the water table, if we saw a multi-year drought. Similarly, when we see multiple years with higher than average precipitation, that's when the water table starts to rise. So there's often a lag in the effect of, say, a seasonal increase or decrease in precipitation.
Oh, that's really interesting. And so in terms of mapping, how does the survey take inventory of how groundwater is flowing in the state and what is happening, you know, with water resources that are, you know, going through sediment and soil?
Good. Yeah. We're involved in inventorying at the statewide level and also at the county level. So one interesting project that we just wrapped up was in association with Bayfield County, way up in northern Wisconsin. And for this project, what we did was to inventory flowing artesian wells. So these are wells that don't require a pump for the most part. Water naturally flows to the surface because of the geologic and topographic conditions. The local residents really value the flowing artesian wells in the area. For a hydrogeologist, flowing wells and springs, too, are really helpful because they're an easy way to sample groundwater. It's coming right
it's
to the
surface,
right?
It's coming right to
right?
you. Yeah.
Yeah. And the water chemistry of that groundwater then emanating from a spring or a flowing well can inform where water enters the aquifer and how long it takes to flow from what we call the recharge area, where water enters the system, to the well, what we call the discharge area. So in Bayfield County, you know, there's very little development or agriculture, and water quality is really high. But that also means it might be vulnerable to changes in land use. So for this reason, documenting where the flowing artesian wells are and doing some initial baseline chemistry on them is really helping to better assess their vulnerability to changes in the future.
What can you tell us about research related to toxic chemicals or PFAS, and what are you finding in water resources?
Yeah, so I think a good thing to know too is that really the first stop for Wisconsin residents with concerns about PFAS, per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a really big sort of hot topic today, right? A contaminant of concern. The first stop should always be a county or local health department or a city engineering department. If residents have concern, and then the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources too has an abundance of information on PFAS on their website, and so that's another good place to look. But to your question, how might the State Geological Survey get involved? I'll give you an example of a current project that we have. This is a collaborative project led by Shangping Zhu at UW-Milwaukee, but also includes Dave Hart from our office. And so PFAS is often released into the environment, and then will seep into the shallow groundwater aquifers where it can enter surface water bodies like Lake Michigan, perhaps. So the goal of this research is actually to test the aquifer materials. And this is where the survey comes in. Because we have a research collections and education center that houses rock core and sediments collected over decades across the state. And it's really like a library of Wisconsin's subsurface materials. And so these researchers are actually testing the aquifer materials themselves to get a better sense of whether PFAS has sorbed onto these materials, and then how likely it is to be released into aquifers and ultimately impact a surface water body like Lake Michigan.
Sue Swanson is Wisconsin's new state geologist, director of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. You can join in with your questions, comments, 800-642-1234. Tim in Hollandale is here. Hi, Tim. What would you like to ask? Hi.
I heard her say a lot of stuff about glaciers, but I didn't hear her say anything about the Driftless region and some of the unique features it has. I know there's a cave up by Barneville. That's, I don't know, dates back, I think, to prehistoric, but I'm not completely sure about that.
Tim, thank you. Sue, what can you tell us about the Driftless region?
Yeah, that's a really unique area of Wisconsin. So what we're talking about is the sort of southwest third of Wisconsin. And this is an area that to our knowledge, has never been covered by glacial ice. It's really a unique area. Because of that, when you drive through the Driftless area, you see the rock exposed. Whereas in other areas of Wisconsin, we see the rolling landscape that is more influenced by that, the glacial activity. And so there's a lot of sort of steep valleys and high ridges in the Driftless area. And you can actually see then many of the sedimentary bedrock layers that make up Wisconsin and which are present elsewhere in the state. They're just covered up by glacial materials. Because they've been exposed to the environment, mm-hmm. For much longer periods of time, groundwater has had a chance to seep into some of these rocks and actually dissolve materials like limestone or dolomite. And the listener's right. There's caves in the area. One of the larger caves is Cave of the Mounds, which some folks may have visited. But yeah, these take a long time to develop because a large cavity first needs to form, and then the stalactites and stalagmites form within that cavity by that dripping water.
Let's go to Reed now in Kenosha. Reed, hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was under the impression that we were in an interglacial period, the whole planet, for more than 10,000 years. And your guest just mentioned that the Wisconsin ice sheet was still present as early as just 7 or 6,000 years ago. So my question is, am I mistaken about the retreat of the glaciers in a planetary scale? Or was Wisconsin one of the last glacial sheets to finish out mm-hmm. the glaciation
finish
period?
Finish the period. Yes, Reed, thank you. Sue?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm going to go to the long-term question that Reed asked about first. And you're absolutely right that there's been a whole series of glacial and interglacial cycles throughout the history of our planet. And these cycles are the results of changes in the shape of the Earth's orbit and the tilt of the Earth's axis. And And they tend to follow a pattern of, like 100,000 years or 500,000 year cycles. So that is true. There are planetary controls on glacial and interglacial cycles. But the most recent glacial period is when what we call the Laurentide ice sheet advanced into North America. And of course, there were other large ice sheets that were present at that time too. And Wisconsin wasn't the last place from which the Laurentide retreated. But from Wisconsin, it retreated, roughly 7,000 years ago from northern Wisconsin.
Sue, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Sue Swanson is State Geologist, Director of the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey, which is part of UW-Madison Division of Extension. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks to Terry in Fifield for requesting more discussions that focus on the northern reaches of Wisconsin.
I was wondering if you could do more stuff on the government in northern part of the state. Seems like you guys kind of hit Wausau and stop, and there's a lot of state left to go.
Indeed there is. Terry, thanks for your comments. And you can join the discussion at any point. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sheldon Johnson is Executive Director of Visions Northwest, that is based in Spooner, serving 10 counties and tribal nations in the region. Sheldon, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. And on the other side of the state, we have Tommy Wortman, Interim Executive Director for Grow North Regional Economic Development, headquartered in Rhinelander, serving 8 counties in the northeastern region. Tommy, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Tommy, let's start with you. St. Louis Fed says in 2021 that all the counties in your respective regions produced about $14 billion in economic output. That's less than 4% of the state total. What are the challenges to expanding your local economies?
You know, I'd like to start with some of the things that we got going great, but I'll start with that too. You know, the thing about it is that what we got going up here is something that you really can't, you can't buy. I mean, we've got people want to live here. They want to move here. We do have some headwinds. I wouldn't say they're unique to our specific region maybe, but you know, it's the, you know, we got the workforce, housing, childcare, the broadband, the stories that people that kind of keep coming back at us that are headwinds. I know that the Minneapolis Fed, for example, was talking with regards to housing. You know, you have some of the, I don't want to call it NIMBYism, right? Not in my backyard for getting more housing. But, you know, we've got the same sorts of things that are difficult to getting some of those things. We have the desire. We have people wanting to be there. We have efforts in broadband that are really expanding. They're slow, but they're really expanding, and that's going to be a real positive for our region, no doubt. But, you know, what we have is we hear this over and over, so it's anecdotal to one extent, but it's anecdotal enough that, in my opinion, it just keeps coming back. People will want to take a job. They show up. They want to find a house. They can't find a house. Or if they do find a house and they've got a child, they can't find childcare. You know, so that affects workforce. You know, that story, I'm sure we've heard that a lot in a lot of places. But those are some of the things that we are seeing. But the desire is there to want to be in our region. And I think I'm sure Sheldon probably sees the same side of that, too.
Sheldon, what are your headwinds? We're hearing about the issues of workforce housing, of childcare, broadband. What do you grapple with?
Yeah, the same thing that Tommy mentioned. I think this is statewide implications as well. All of those in that bucket are certainly concerns that we see and we face. And it's not really new necessarily. We've been struggling with those efforts for many years. It's just that right now they're at the top of the bubble. They're rising over the top of the bucket, I should say. And it's something that we struggle with, and we work with our committees and groups with trying to enforce, not enforce, but reinforce the need for continued education, technical college, university system to get our employees trained and retrained and make sure that they're ready to take on the next task.
Well, Sheldon, when you look at education and higher education options, UW-Superior is the only four-year campus with the universities of Wisconsin in your regions. What role does education have in creating quality jobs in your area?
Oh, they have a huge role. While UW system, we do have the University of Superior. We've got Northland College. We've got a great technical college system through Northwoods Tech. So it's all hands on deck effort to really kind of engage those systems with the business sector. So really trying to forge those relationships between businesses and the technical college in particular for manufacturing and production to make sure that they are working together to make sure that the kids that are coming out of school and those adults that are looking to be retrained have those resources available to them.
Tommy, what are you doing on your side in terms of education and ensuring that the needs of employers are really with, you know, as much as possible in lockstep with what educators can provide?
Yeah, you know, we work with partners, certainly up in our region, Nicolet College, which is where we're based out of. They've done a wonderful job of trying to discuss with local employers, what do you need? How fast can we turn around that? How can we be, how can Nicolet be? I say we. I also, full disclosure, I technically work additionally, in addition to my responsibilities at Grow North, with Nicolet College, but they really are a great partner, and they do this, you know, they reach out to the community to find out what are the things that are in need. And because we're a smaller technical college, we have a little bit more of an ability to pivot to really serve those needs. In addition to Nicolet College, for those who don't, for example, need credit, we do work with things that are entities such as the SBDC, and they will provide for entrepreneurs, which, and I'm not sure, I can't speak to Sheldon's portion over there, but we definitely have a really large entrepreneurial and small business effort. So for those folks who don't need the credit, you know, the SBDC offers classes in our region, and Nicolet College certainly offers some really great credits. They've got a CBE program that they're really well known for that really transitions well for people who maybe have experience. Then that CBE is competency-based education. Have you heard much about that? Do you know what that is?
No. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So the idea is that education in a large portion, they break it down so that there's competencies so mm-hmm. that if you can I don't know, let's say you're a welder, and the example I give a lot is if you were a welder that grew up with a lot of opportunities on Grandpa's farm and you want to now transition into maybe full-time welding, well, you don't want to have to start at the ground and take every single class, you know, and just go through the stuff that you otherwise know. If you can pass competencies and show that you're competent in certain areas, that's a way that you can maybe go faster and get through your education faster for you know, so you get to get that certified credit at the end. So that's something that's really been pushed at Nicolet College, and that's been a real positive thing. We've been recognized nationally, I want to even say last month, for that. So that's a way that's maybe slightly different than other places, and CBE is really taking off across the country. It just so happens that in the Northwoods, we actually are a leader in that.
Interesting. Sheldon, is the state doing enough to boost economic growth in your region? How much interaction do you have with the state government?
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of interaction that happens between state government and the region, and at the local level as well. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, WDC, is that key partner of ours. We're a key strategic partner. Business Northwest is with WDC. And that relationship specifically is very, very strong. Their regional director, Dave Wurzba, really is in our footprint in our 10 counties and works closely with all of the economic development partners that we do work with as well across the state. At the legislative level, we have great relationships with our representatives across the region, and that really does help tie us to the legislature and to funding. While funding has always been tight and will continue to be tight as it relates to economic assistance, we do everything we can to try to promote and push for continued a prosperity for our residents and manufacturing companies here in the region.
We're talking about northern Wisconsin's economy with Sheldon Johnson there in the northwest, Tommy Wartman in the northeast, regional economic development leaders. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Ernest in Hayward. Ernest, hi.
One of the many government barriers to economic development is the local property tax. Wouldn't replacing the local property tax with land taxes with no loss in public revenue be good for economic development? If you build anything now, you're taxed. This would not happen under a land tax. It implies no loss in public revenue.
Ernest, thank you. Tommy, you go ahead first.
So I would like to clarify that Grow North is actually a private entity. We are not supported by the taxpayer for ourselves. I know different regional economic groups are. Having said that, we operate off of a key strategic partnership with the WEDC, so we do benefit certainly from that portion. So I'm not sure that I can adequately speak to that. I mean, obviously, in different regions, they would benefit, certainly certain counties that have their county economic developments that are supported by the state in that capacity directly, they would be, affected by something like that. Maybe Sheldon can speak better to that.
Yeah, I'll try, Tommy. And as Tommy's group, as ours is as well, we receive some funding from WDC through our key strategic partnership, but we don't receive any other state or federal assistance to support Business Northwest. But inside of that, I think the caller's question was on valuing the land versus mm-hmm. the improvement. And that's a little bit further reach than I have in knowledge of that land base versus the property value base of the building. So I want to take a hard pass on that one.
Okay. And in terms of like TIF districts and using like increment financing to try to build up economic development projects, is that something, Sheldon, that you have looked toward in your communities you work with?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Tax increment finance districts programs are huge for our small communities to grow that economic base. Those equalized value improvements that communities can retain for public infrastructure, investment deals with businesses that are looking to expand, they're very critical. And they always have to be looked at as an economic opportunity for communities. They have to do their due diligence, obviously, to make sure that the business is going to succeed and pay off those debts that the TID will incur. But without that, there's not a lot of economic activity and taxable programs that you can actually see that economic development growth.
Tommy, do you want to add anything there?
I would just say is that just like in any place, we get certain regions that while we are clearly rural in the northern communities up there, some of the very, very rural areas, maybe people who have gotten into office don't have a lot of experience. They might have never worked with a TID or a TIF. And so I think that's something that maybe larger cities, certainly larger cities have more experience with. In a place like Rhinelander, there's plenty of experience there. But when you get into some of the very, very rural towns where people just aren't maybe as familiar with it, just like everybody. I heard a message the other day when I called into a place with a small business, and they said, the whole world is busy. Please be kind to the person who showed up to answer the phone. And that's the truth. And I think especially in rural communities and rural governments, you have people who really want to do well by their people who maybe don't have, they're not professional politicians. They're showing up to say, I want to make a difference here. And there's so many tools out there like the TIF, like the TID, like all these types of financings. But if you're not familiar with them, you have to accustom yourself to it. And a lot of those positions they're part-time positions in the fact that the people who are running them, they also have a full-time job, right? So there's a lot of great opportunities. And obviously that's why people sometimes to some extent kind of convene towards larger cities in rural areas, which is still a wonderful thing. So certainly a great tool to have, and it's an absolutely necessary tool to have and to know how it works. Yeah.
Economic developers in Northeast and Northwest Wisconsin, Tommy Wartman there, Sheldon Johnson with us. We check in on the economic health of the northern part of our state and hear from you. Call in with a question. Share comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks to a listener request, we talk with a pair of economic development leaders about the goals and challenges of northern Wisconsin's economy. Tommy Wortman leads Grow North Regional Economic Development, focused on 8 counties in the northeasternmost region. Sheldon Johnson heads up Visions Northwest, seeking to build up the economy in 10 counties on the other side of the state. Both work with tribal governments in these regions. Call in with a question, share your perspective, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff in Superior has a question. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm very concerned about the safety and the forest products or, you know, forestry industry in northern Wisconsin. And I say this because we're going to be rebuilding the Blatnik Bridge in the next, you know, 10 years or so. And so there's going to be increased traffic of logging trucks on Belknap Street in downtown Superior, because that traffic's going to be, you know, rerouted over Highway 2. We, you know, there's paper mills in Duluth and in Cloquet. And I'm just wondering, has the forest products industry thought about their impact on, or are we prepared to think about the infrastructure that supports that industry?
Jeff, thank you. And of course, northern Wisconsin has a long history of forestry and logging. Sheldon, you first.
Yeah, the forestry industry is very significant to the region. While there's been a downturn in some of the manufacturing plants across the state of Wisconsin that use the pulp, it is still a very vibrant and active industry. So we see that issue, and the caller's concern about the traffic impact of the city of Superior with the expected tear down of the Blatnik Bridge and a rebuild, where that bridge is going to be out for 5 years, and there's going to be a lot of traffic that's going to be going through the city of Superior on Belknap. But as it relates to the forest industry in itself, that is one of the largest increasing job sectors, employment sectors in our region, natural resources and mining. We're seeing about a 46% increase projected for employment to the year 2030. While it's a small number, representing about 600 employment change, it's important to the region. It's important to the state of Wisconsin and the nation as well. So the caller's question, as it relates to the resources for forestry, it's critical to the state.
What I'm hearing you saying, Sheldon, is that extraction industries are not retreating. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, that's what we're seeing. At least that's what the projections are saying. Again, the projection for the year 2030 is showing about a 500-person gain in employment in the natural resource sector. So it's not retreating necessarily. There's still lots of opportunities and for the wood production in northwest Wisconsin and in Tommy's area as well. Wisconsin has a wealth of timber of many different species that have opportunities for export and for use in the United States.
Tommy, what do you see in wood production in your side of the state in the Northeast?
I would harp back to the forestry convention that was actually held in Florence back in April. I remember listening, and this was a really big thing that they brought up there, was we've got this you get a lot of infrastructure that's roads, right? There's a lot of geographic area that covers, and you've got bigger trucks, and you've got roads that just haven't had I'm going to say the upkeep that is necessary, and those typically are, I suspect, covered by the tax base. And if you've got people who have either left the region, that's key critical infrastructure, and that needs to be taken care of. That's above my pay grade as to how they decide to do that, but it's certainly a super important portion of our economy. And obviously, in the last few years, when we've seen the price of materials go up and down, I know there were some, and this is not a political statement, there were some concerns, obviously, about the foreign influence on the price of wood in some of those cases. But certainly a really important thing to consider to make sure that we have the infrastructure, because what you don't want to have is a whole bunch of material that you can ship that's been ready to be cut, and then suddenly you can't do it because you don't have the roads that are taken care of enough to get it to the market.
Talking about northern Wisconsin's economic challenges and opportunities, Tommy Wortman, Sheldon Johnson, regional economic development leaders. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Tommy, turning to broadband, your organization is prioritizing expanded broadband access. So what are you doing to do this, and what is the situation with high-speed internet?
Well, high-speed internet is on its way.
That was a big exhale.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I think we can feel the emotions in that.
Well, you know, the thing is it's a key infrastructure. We need it. A lot of our local governments in our region really have their plans in place, and we have been for a couple of years now really, really working to, you know, we had the speed test. We continue to have the speed test. There's obviously broadband, the BEAD funding that is, you know, right now they're in the planning stages of that. I know Vilas County, for example, they've got $70 million in initiatives and 13,000 homes and businesses that they're going to be lighting up to get this high-speed internet. We've obviously got multimodal different options. And I know Oneida County specifically, too. They've been working very, very hard to get this stuff moving. It's just somewhat the devil's in the details, right? I mean, you can say, let's get it done, and we will, and we are getting it done. It's just the actual, the getting it done. And, you know, what does that mean? Well, when you looked at where people were moving during the pandemic, they were moving to places like northern Wisconsin. And, in fact, you continue to see growth in the value of housing. People want to be there, but they need certain critical infrastructure for, you know, for example, the internet. You cannot work remote if you don't have consistently good internet. It's one thing to have good internet. It's another thing to have consistently good internet. And so that is definitely a, you know, it's just something that we are absolutely working on, and every community is working on it. It's just not going to happen with the switch of a light.
Okay. And Sheldon,
broadband capacity.
right. Sheldon, in our last minute together, what is the situation in your side of the state with that critical piece of infrastructure?
Yeah, there are definitely significant gaps in the infrastructure for broadband within the region, and we're working closely with our communities to do that. So Visions Northwest is a recipient of some of the BEAD dollars, the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Funds from the PSC. So we're working with our counties, nine of our counties in the Bad River Tribe, working with them to look at the planning efforts that are necessary to expand the broadband reach that the providers are making currently. We've got a great relationship with the providers in the region, and we're just working together to make those next steps to make access available to all.
And that takes time.
It certainly does.
It takes time. Yes. Okay. Well, Sheldon and Tommy, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on, and really appreciate giving the chance to have the rural communities give a voice to what's going on up in our areas.
Tommy Wortman, Interim Executive Director for Grow North Regional Economic Development, that is based in Rhinelander, serving eight counties. And Sheldon Johnson is Executive Director of Visions Northwest, based in Spooner, serving 10 counties. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.